Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
Please be seated. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Jill Fenske, and I'm the outreach coordinator for the St. Francis Vestry. I'm a little nervous, but I'm honored to be here to talk to you today. When I first took on the post of outreach coordinator, Mother Sarah and I had a conversation about outreach and where we should focus our efforts in the coming years. We wanted to find a need specific to our community and parish and seek to address that need. As Sarah has mentioned in some of her sermons in this past year, it seems that the most pressing soul sickness we suffer in our area is a loss of connection with what is truly important in life. We all get immersed in job, school, and our other activities, and we are moving so fast and so furious that we lose touch with what really feeds our souls. We live in a very success-driven society, and sometimes we get so focused on being the best that we lose sight of the fact that whether we win or lose, we all have value to God, even at our lowest or our most incapable moments. How do we reconnect with this love? How, in those rare, quiet moments, do we bring ourselves back in touch with the constant, unconditional love of God? In Corinthians, it says, "As it is, these remain: faith, hope, and love, the three of them. And the greatest of them is love." I think that the reason it says that the greatest of these is love is because love involves more than one person. One can have faith or hope all by oneself, but love, that takes two or more. It requires us to reach out beyond ourselves and interact with each other. So maybe the best way to reconnect with the love of God is to love others. I'm speaking, of course, about outreach. When most people in the church think about St. Francis of Assisi, they think of his love for animals and nature. But his intense love was for all of God's creation. He had some particularly poignant examples of reaching out in love to people with whom he was not initially comfortable, in moving through that discomfort to go so far as to kiss a leper on the lips. That was his way of bringing himself closer to the knowledge of God's unconditional love. The moment when he kissed the leper was so powerful for St. Francis that, by one account, he was brought to his knees, and the leper was the one who helped him back onto his feet. For this sermon today, Mother Sarah asked me to highlight our emerging outreach ministry with special needs children. We have a few families here at St. Francis who have special needs children, and we noticed that some of those families had either stopped coming to church or weren't attending regularly. It is challenging to have a special needs child in your family. It is a little bit like grieving each time you are reminded that your beautiful, perfect child is different than people expect. And it is difficult to even be around other people, much less reach out for community, when you are grieving. We have started a volunteer program to enable these families to come back to church by having a volunteer shadow each child through Sunday school so that the parents can attend church together. We hope to start with a core group from the families already among us and then expand the program to include those beyond our doors. The amazing thing that we've found from our little pilot program is that the service goes both ways. It is not only the families with special needs children who benefit. The volunteers are learning so much more about how to reconnect with what is truly important in God's eyes. For the volunteers, the experience of putting themselves out there for these children has been transformative. Some of the volunteers at first thought this might be like any other volunteer endeavor at church, like volunteering for the antique show or the homecoming fair. What they have discovered is that this is an extremely personal undertaking. To give of yourself to bring peace to a family who knows very little peace on a daily basis is humbling. Thus far, all of the volunteers seem to share the feeling that they are privileged to be a part of this ministry, that these families, who almost have to be so guarded just to get by in our society, have let them in to share their children and their journey. This ministry holds a special place in my heart because I grew up with a severely developmentally disabled brother. His name was Kenneth. We used to call Kenneth broken. It sounds a little bit harsh, but it was my family's way of bringing some humor to the reality of his disability. Kenneth was a quadriplegic. He never walked, and he never talked. He had cerebral palsy that the doctors believe was caused by events during his birth. When Kenneth was born, my mother knew that something was different about him. The doctors took 2 years to finally give my mother an official diagnosis. 2 years of telling her that he was simply failure to thrive, with all of the negative connotations that put on her, a woman already in grief over every developmental milestone she saw slip by as he grew from baby to little boy. She felt guilty, as if because she was the one who delivered him, that she must have done something wrong during the labor that caused him to be broken. His brain never developed past that of an 18-month-old. The doctors thought he wouldn't live past the age of 5. I was born when Kenneth was 18 months old. It is a very unique experience growing up as the sibling of a kid like Kenneth. My mother said it was really interesting as I grew how I would try to pull him along with me, trying to get him to crawl after a rolling ball, babble at him, trying to get him to talk back to me. I marvel at the innocence of young children in the face of disability. They do not see a difference in value. It seems that somehow we get lost along the way to becoming adults. After years of being pressed to measure up to society, we find ourselves putting value on other people based on what they can do. It was hard on our family. Kenneth required a lot of care, attention, and time. Me and my two other brothers had to sacrifice without ever being asked if we were willing to. My mother has also said that she was so numb from the emotional battering she endured by doctors, society, and even family that she didn't even really realize she had a daughter until I was 2. It's no easy thing to feel sibling rivalry towards someone who is already seen as being at a disadvantage by the rest of the world. Talk about a guilt trip. The reality of Kenneth's physical disability tore each of us up inside slowly and quietly. But ironically, the experience of Kenneth is what knit us back together as a family. Growing up with him, I think I came to an understanding very young that Kenneth had a different way of measuring up. My mother was his champion in this regard. She always said she had to coax him out from deep within the shell he was given to live out his life. He was full of personality. Even though he could barely move and could only really grunt, cry, or squeal with delight, those were the best. You waited for those all day. Most people outside of our family didn't quite know what to do with him. I had a great uncle who used to sit down beside Kenneth at every family gathering and ask in a very grandfatherly way, "So, Kenneth, when are you going to start talking?" When I was very young, I used to get very defensive when other kids would stare at Kenneth. I would get angry and say, "What are you staring at?" Our family was set apart, even by well-meaning people and those who loved us. And though people didn't mean to set us apart, it was palpable, and it was a constant undercurrent in our lives. People weren't sure how to reach out to us. The place we felt the most normal was when we would go visit Kenneth after he had moved to a separate full-time care facility. The staff who worked with people like Kenneth every day of their lives clearly had immense respect for Kenneth. They spoke to him instead of about him. They caught on to the personality that my mom started to draw out of him at an early age, and they continued to nurture it. If only that kind of understanding had been our experience out in the world at large. Whenever I would go to visit the developmental center where Kenneth lived, and I was surrounded by differently abled people, I was sharply aware that in all of my so-called ability, I had an emptiness, a sadness. And Kenneth had a wholeness that I wondered if I ever would possess. His smile was completely pure. People who really knew Kenneth used to say that when they would talk to him, they really felt listened to. He would focus on the person sitting talking to him, and you felt this warm presence. You could feel him listening. Even though he never spoke back, he would be sad for you when you were sad, and he would smile, and your whole world would light up. It seems to me now that it was similar to when we speak to God. We don't hear anything back, but just the faith that he hears us and loves us unconditionally, that is what it felt like to be loved by Kenneth. Kenneth died when he was 29. When Kenneth passed away, my mother started to write a book, saying that she never had anyone who could tell her what path to take, who to talk to get the best care for Kenneth, or where to go to get help for herself. When a parent finds out that their child has special needs, that alone is a huge reality to comprehend. Their whole world is turned on its head. They suddenly are faced with a very different parenting experience than the one they had planned for. Those of us who have never had this experience assume that there are agencies to help in this kind of situation. The reality is that the agencies are there, yes, but that the parents are expected to just know that they exist and where to go to get their assistance. Then, these shell-shocked parents are expected to pick themselves up and fight like heck for the rest of their lives for the proper education or fair treatment of their children. And if people do reach out, many of them do so out of pity. Pity is the last thing these children need. We can learn so much about ourselves when we investigate our reaction to special needs people. When we walk down the street or are out about town, how do we react to someone in a wheelchair? Someone whose face does not look symmetrical, who is perhaps drooling or moaning instead of speaking clearly. Do we look with pity at the caregiver or parent? Do we take the farthest route around them or avoid eye contact? How about when we meet a child who rocks back and forth on their feet and will not make eye contact? Do we speak to them as though they were 3, even though they are clearly 12? What is it in us that makes us react this way to differently abled people? is it not very close to how people reacted to Jesus? Because they did not understand, they reacted with fear. The flip side of our culpability for Jesus' death is that Jesus willingly submitted himself to that side of us so that we could be forgiven. When we see differently abled people, does it make us feel guilt for all that we are capable of and yet do not do? I am pretty certain that they do not feel those negative feelings about us. We feel these strong feelings, but they are completely our own. For many people, people with disabilities are like a mirror. We could learn so much from these people if only we would turn our gaze inward and know that we are forgiven. When I was becoming a teenager, it was the toughest time to visit Kenneth. I felt the pressure to be everything. And when I would visit Kenneth, he seemed to already be everything. And yet he was the one who was supposed to have limited ability. I felt like a failure, and I did not understand. I look back now, and I realize that I was simply looking to the wrong part of my ability. While many of us spend our days of the week shuttling our kids to special tutors and many extracurricular activities to push for every last college resume item, some among us pray every night that the next day will simply be normal, or at least close. Some of our beloved families tire of having to explain to other people why their child behaves differently from other children, and they have to fight tooth and nail just to get the right education for their child. Some of them manage large panels of doctors, counselors, educators, and lawyers to assure that their child will be given the support that they need and that the law requires. Some of these families have stopped coming to church because they worry that their children will either be a burden to others or that they will disturb people in church with their difference, or worse, that they will feel unwelcome. In short, these families have to swim upstream against the very strong current of what is socially acceptable or normal. Why should this be? In today's reading from Galatians, it says, "From now on, let no one make trouble for me, for I carry the marks of Jesus branded on my body." The marks that Jesus had branded on his body were made by men who did not understand what Jesus was all about, and in their lack of understanding, were afraid. They were so afraid that they crucified him so that they did not have to face the troubles within their own souls. When we ascribe a moral judgment to special needs people, when we are afraid or feel sorry for them, we are essentially wounding them, putting marks on them with our own thoughts. They are pure souls who have the same value in the eyes of God as anyone else. Some of them are only considered special needs because of how they measure up to man-made standards. Who are we to feel sorry for them? Perhaps they can look right back at us and feel sorry for us, who feel so driven to live within the confines of what we ourselves have defined as successful, valuable, lovable. These children may look or act broken on the outside, but aren't we all broken on the inside? Maybe these children can lead the way towards healing all of us. When humanity finally realized who Jesus was, it was too late. Jesus' importance to God was beyond our understanding. The same is true for these children. The same is true for ourselves. God's love for all of us, regardless of our ability or our disability, is beyond our understanding. And it is constant and unconditional. Perhaps because they are stripped of the so-called privilege of living up to the society-driven definition of success, they can teach all of us amazing things about God's definition of success. As the reading from Matthew said today, "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." If you listen closely enough, these children are saying the same thing to the rest of us. Learn from me. I will give you rest.